say, first of all, that 13 months after you get to a church is too soon to have your last sermon. But as Pastor Kendra prayed, when we try to follow the direction that God is leading us in, sometimes we make transitions that seem a little counterintuitive. So I'm excited for Pastor Tara as she comes to be the senior pastor here, and I was looking forward to working with her. I know Azure Hills will be in a good place for a long time to come. We're excited. We've announced the last couple weeks that our presence in the internet and TV is changed a little bit. It's grown a little bit. But one thing that we can tend to forget sometimes when we think about that is that each of us comes from different contexts, lives in different places, has different experiences. And the way that we read the Bible, the way that we worship God, the communities that we live and worship in, the stories that we tell are all influenced by that. And so I come from, just like you, a very specific context. I, like many of you, and unlike many others of you, am a straight, white, American Christian male. And so the stories and experiences and word I have to share from you comes informed by that. So there are many of you watching online or through TV or maybe even here that maybe don't share those experiences, but hopefully God will be able to bring us to the same place as we try to learn from his word. There's a joke, maybe you've heard it, maybe you can resonate with it. An atheist, a CrossFitter, and a vegan walk into a bar. I only know because they told everyone 30 seconds after they got there. Now, I'm not an atheist and I'm not a vegan, but I did do CrossFit for a while, and this reputation of how much CrossFitters love to talk about how great and superior CrossFit is was one that I found so obnoxious that I tried to hide that I did CrossFit. Now, this doesn't mean that I don't like to share the things that I enjoy or find important. It just means that some of them have such a reputation for the way that they're shared that I'd rather people didn't identify me with those. I'm excited that the praise team sang Dare to be a Daniel. I was worried that I was going to have to do a solo by myself up here, but thankfully they kept you from having to listen to that. Amen. You guys did a good job. I was recently asked if I've ever had to dare to be a Daniel. I had heard the phrase before. I knew it was a song, but I didn't really remember how the song went. I don't remember hearing it too many times. And I had never been asked before if I had ever needed or had the opportunity to dare to be a Daniel. The person asked me this question in response to learning that I've been an Adventist my whole life, have gone only to Adventist schools, kindergarten through master's, lived around many other Adventists, and now work for the Adventist Church. Implicit in this question was an expectation that my faith had never really been challenged or tested by some outside persecutory force. And that if I indeed had never had to dare to be a Daniel, then my faith was somehow less than or unproven at least. So I started thinking, have I ever had to dare to be a Daniel? Have you? Now, what does that phrase even mean? Right? We as Adventists have a very, very specific, particular relationship with Daniel. And I started, as I was hearing this question, I started cycling through all the stories of Daniel I could remember. And the first one I landed on was one that I was reminded of from one of my high school Bible teachers who gave us extra credit if we did the Daniel diet for 2 weeks. Did you have to do this? Mr. Henry make you do this? Yeah. He told us if you eat only vegetables and water for 2 weeks, then you'll get extra credit. Now, I don't remember anyone doing it and not cheating. I knew that I would do it without cheating, so I didn't do it. But my friends that did do it, well, let's just, I think the statute of limitations has passed on that dishonesty. But yeah, in Daniel, at the very beginning, we see described this this new ruler comes in, and he has taken over basically the lives of the Israelite people. And the especially royal and handsome and important and well-equipped, capable, young Israelites are brought before the king's court. They're given the rations and the lavishness of that court. But Daniel's like, no, we don't want to do that. We don't want to eat that. We won't defile ourselves, as was read in the scripture, with that, with those rations, with that food. We're just going to do vegetables and water. And the guy who's in charge of these guys is terrified at this idea. He's like, no, 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 don't do that. The king told me to give you this food and wine. If you don't eat and drink it, I'm afraid for my head. Like, that's literally what it said. Like, I'm afraid he will kill me if you don't eat this, because you will be in a different state than the people that do. And Daniel's like, no, no, it's okay. Trust me. Let's do a little test. We've heard of this test before. He does the vegetables and water for however long it is, 10 days, I think. And then when he's done, they're amazed at how much better these people that have consisted on a vegetarian diet are than the people that ate the king's food. The king is amazed. The man's head is safe. And we are affirmed as Adventists. Okay, so that's what daring to be a Daniel means. Daniel was a good Adventist that dared to be a vegetarian in a place where that was not the norm. Well, I guess I have to answer that question of daring to be a Daniel as no. I'm not personally vegetarian, don't tell anybody. And even worse, I don't really like veggie meat. I mean, a stripple is good. I'll eat a stripple. Or a chicken nugget, have you ever had those? Ooh, yeah. And if I order something without bacon, I don't feel like I'm doing some sort of witness. So if that's my experience, and if that's what it means to dare to be a Daniel, then I guess I never have had to do that. Maybe you can answer this question yes, though. Maybe you have dared to be a Daniel in that way. You're a vegetarian, or you've proclaimed a health message, or you've just gotten the grilled cheese in and out while everybody else is getting that animal-style double-double. I'm going to miss In-N-Out. Or maybe not. Maybe you're like me, and you have to answer this question no. Or maybe if you answer it yes, we need to rethink it a little bit. I mean, was someone making you eat a certain type of food because they were afraid they'd be beheaded if you didn't? Did you prove to someone how superior your diet was to theirs, and they came away from that conversation some way other than annoyed? Maybe you have, but I haven't. But that can't be all dare to be a Daniel means, right? There's the next story, or one of the next stories. It's got to be about the dreams he interpreted. You've got the statue dream. This is, man, we love this as Adventists. We've got it on the posters. I've seen the statue built before, huge. It was pretty impressive. Or maybe even that statue, or its interpretation, or the other prophetic interpretations that we get from Daniel. Maybe that's even the reason that you're an Adventist today. But if interpreting those dreams or revealing those prophecies is what it means to dare to be a Daniel, then I still have to answer no. I can't say that I've ever shared Daniel's experience here. Now, maybe it's a yes for you. Maybe you've interpreted someone's prophetic dreams, seen some actual writing on a wall, and told people what it meant. Maybe you foretold the future of nations. But I haven't. Now, but that can't be all dare to be a Daniel means, right? We got to keep going down in the story. This is the story that, yeah. It's about the time Daniel's friends wouldn't kneel down when they were supposed to the idol, to the statue. statue that the king had made of himself. When the music started and everyone else got down and they stood tall and they were thrown in the fiery furnace and God saved them and the king was amazed. Or like the VeggieTales version where it's like the cucumber gets mad at them for not worshiping the chocolate bunny, right? So, yeah. Or it's the similar story where Daniel did something like his friends where he prayed in a place and at a time when he wasn't supposed to, and he praised God in a place and a time when he wasn't supposed to, and he was arrested and thrown into the lion's den, and God kept him safe, and the king was amazed. But, man, that's still a no for me. Maybe you've lived somewhere that it was illegal or dangerous to be a Christian. Maybe you've had an experience like Pastor Elias, living in a part of a world where that's not the norm, where that's tough to do. Maybe your life has been threatened for what you believe, but mine hasn't been. So I guess the answer's no. Never had to dare to be a Daniel. Probably a good thing I didn't sing along when they sang that song. What does that say about me? What if you're in the same boat as me and you've never actually had to dare to be a Daniel, what does that say about you? What does that say about us? We look up to people like Daniel. We revere the heroes of the faith, those who refuse to give up their belief in the face of death, those who were miraculously saved because of that faith, those who were put to death because of that faith. We remember the Beatitudes, and some of them stick better than others, like the one that goes, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account." This is Jesus talking. "Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." That's what I want my Christian experience to be like. That's who I've been taught to look up to. I mean, I remember going to camp. I went to camp a lot as a kid because my uncle ran a camp in a different conference, and then I had to go to my conference camp too. And I remember there was this one lady at one of the camps, and every night after dinner, she would tell stories. She was like the best storyteller. It didn't matter if it was when I was 7 or when I finally stopped going to camp when I was like 14. I loved her stories, and they were all about heroes of the Christian faith, martyrs or people that lived in a time and a place where it was dangerous to be a Christian, and the things that they had to do for Jesus, the way that they had to dare. Or I remember reading the guide every week. Do they still make the guide? They still make the guide, right? Got the factory on the back, yeah. But there was almost always a story of someone in the mission field or someone who lived in a part of the world where it was dangerous to be a Christian. These are the people that I was taught to look up to. We remember the history of Christianity, people who had to hide, who had to worship in secret, people who were jailed and killed because they followed Jesus. Until they weren't. It's easy for us to forget that Christianity became the official religion of some of the same societies that originally persecuted Christians. It's easy for us to forget that being a Christian is a societal norm for a significant portion of the world. It's easy for us to forget that an undeniably large portion of persecution throughout history, including in many places today, has been perpetrated by Christians rather than against them. And these Christians were ones who believed as sincerely or even more sincerely than we do here. The idea of being persecuted and of standing up for your faith is so ingrained in the culture, history, and practice of Christianity that not only can we forget these painful truths, but we can begin looking for persecution when it's not there. I used to work at the Adventist Book Center, the one right next to the GC. So it's like the good Adventist Book Center, right? I worked there for a few years, and then I quit just because they were making some changes, and I'd been there too long, and I decided to go work at Borders. And this is the first time I was going to be working for like a non-Adventist entity. And I don't know if you remember Borders. Some of you are too young to remember Borders. But since I worked there, I still feel guilty when I go to Barnes & Noble. Like, they're the enemy. I couldn't. But Borders, at the time, was known for being a very progressive company. They were very friendly to gay and lesbian employees. They were very liberal in the way, their hiring practices and in their politics. And so when I went to work there, I quickly discovered that I was the only Christian that worked at this particular one, as far as I knew. And when I worked at the ABC, I worked in the music and the gifts section. So what that meant was I got tons of free music and free gifts. Now, gift is like such an all-encompassing term, but one of the things that we had in our gifts department was all these T-shirts with different like kind of cool ways of saying like I'm a Christian, or different ways to like show by wearing this T-shirt that you're a Christian. And so I had a ton of these, and I decided that would be my witness while I worked at Borders. I don't care how much they persecute me by giving me those looks, or even if they're not giving me looks, I'm what they're thinking about me as I wear my Jesus Rules shirt or my, you know, whatever shirt it was. That's how I was gonna stand up and show what I believe. We want so dearly for that persecution beatitude to be applied to us that we determine that publicly labeling ourselves as Christians is somehow out of the mainstream enough to itself bring persecution. And in some places around the world it is. But here, in a country where every single president has been Christian, where an Adventist ran for president, where both major political parties had multiple prayers and invocations of the Christian God's name in their conventions, is identifying a Christian for me or for us here some great stand? I remember in academy, a Bible teacher telling our class that being a Christian in America is the only thing it's not okay to be anymore. I remember hearing this true story that has kind of turned into a Christian legend in America of a student at a secular school, and the teacher in philosophy class gets up and talks about how God doesn't exist and God is dead, and the student stands up for their faith, and if they don't, and by standing up for their faith, they're going to fail this class because this evil atheist teacher is so bad. Or I think of the times that I've had Adventist professors or leaders share these stories in their own lives about how they proved that atheist researcher in their field wrong and humiliated them, how they proved that evolution wasn't true, how they stood up for what they believed in this society that's so against belief. I think about a woman who decided that she could not do her job because it meant giving marriage certificates to gay people. And she was lauded by certain Christians as being this Christian hero for standing up for what she believed in. I've heard a lot of Christians say that we live in such a politically correct society that you can't be a Christian because being a Christian is politically incorrect. It's offensive. The idea of that particular beatitude is so important to us that we have changed what persecution means. We define the negative reaction to our unpopular or sometimes prejudiced actions as persecution for righteousness' sake. We want so badly to be the same quality of Christian as those famous martyrs that we react to hearing Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas as if we were being burned at the stake. We desire so greatly to be God's special remnant people that we look for a secret conspiracy about how other Christians in the world in general are out to get us at every single turn. We yearn so deeply to dare to be Daniels that we have made an idol out of persecution. persecution, which we eagerly find any excuse to bow down before, instead of actually standing for something worth being persecuted for. The God of Daniel and the Jesus of our Christian heroes does not require persecution. He desires the poor, the mourning, the meek, those that long for righteousness, the merciful, the pure, and the peacemakers. There are millions of people throughout the world of all faiths who are actually persecuted for what they believe. Many of these are Christians. Many of them are Adventists. But even more of them are not. What a dishonor we do to all these children of God when we bow to this, our own idol of self-importance, instead of daring to stand for them. What a disservice we do to their actual suffering when we contrive our own suffering to assuage our guilt for not making peace in their lives. So no, I've had the privilege of never having to dare to be a Daniel. But I pray that I can have the courage to use that privilege to serve those without any. I pray that we can all remember the rest of that most important sermon, that the persecuted are not the only ones who are blessed. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And then at the end of that chapter in Matthew, Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, sends rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous." So let's dare. Let's dare for a righteousness worth actual persecution. But not for persecution's sake, for Christ's sake, for humanity's sake. Let's dare to be poor. Let's dare to mourn. Let's dare to be meek. Let's dare to hunger for righteousness. Let's dare to be merciful. Let's dare to be pure. Let's dare to make peace. Let's dare to love our neighbors and our enemies. And if we are persecuted for this radical righteousness, let's dare to love our persecutors.